It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thank you for joining me this morning. Hope you enjoy the show. I'm going to start off with something that some of you listening may say, well, I don't agree with you at all. But I think the majority of you listening are going to agree with me, and it's not. I'm not going to try to get too scientific into this, but we have concluded, or are about to conclude, one of the worst duck hunting seasons from Canada to the Gulf of Mexico and the Mississippi Flyway in recent memory. Now, I know some of you who are ardent duck hunters will say, I had the best year I've ever had. I don't know what you're talking about, but collectively, looking at the big picture, which is what I'm doing here, we are winding down a year in which the scientists are going to go back to their various state offices in Washington, D.C., and they are going to be filled with letters from questioning and angry hunters saying, you promised us a phenomenal year again, and we had a terrible year. I think the results, when they come in, will show that the Mississippi Flyway harvest of ducks, which we won't know till the fall, but my guess is it's going to be off statistically about 15 to 20%. But I think in reality, it's off much more than that, as the ability of statistics, frankly, to be absolutely accurate when it comes to hunter surveys. Does leave something to be desired, and I'm not trying to demean the statistical world, but the survey of the most active hunting clubs, the most active state areas, and the most active individuals indicates that this has been a year that people are wondering what exactly happened. And I mention this because we're entering a period at the Fish and Wildlife Service where the interest in recruiting hunters and anglers is the number one priority. The government, federal, and the states are all awakening to the point of recognition that we are about to fall off a cliff in the next 10 years in the number of people who hunt and also, ironically, who fish. And if we don't have a reasonable number of people hunting, then the North American wildlife management system will, in fact, need to be changed, because so many of the state's revenues, dollars, come from hunting license sales, from purchases, the tax on Pittman Robertson for hunting equipment, etc., that it is possible that the states would find themselves in a situation where their revenues have been rapidly depleted. We already know that the average age of most hunters, whether it's duck hunters or deer hunters or turkey hunters, is north of 50. In the case of duck hunters, it's getting close to 60. Deer hunters are also skewed towards an older population. So the dynamics are really, really bad after about 10 years from now for the number of people who may be hunting in America. And why did I start this off talking about ducks? Because they have been the resource, the species which has had the most money over time spent on it. They have the most, the individuals involved in sport have the most political influence, have put up the most money, have frankly done the most for conservation, far and away of any constituent group over time, and have done more through Ducks Unlimited and others to save wetlands than anyone ever has. But when you have a situation where hunters are by and large frustrated because they are seeing declining numbers, and you have the Fish and Wildlife Service saying there's nothing going on, we've had consistent hatches, they've been very good because of all the water on the prairies, and hunters don't see that, you have an issue starting now where hunters begin to question the, frankly, the accuracy of the Fish and Wildlife Service, and that's never a good thing. And again, I know some of you listening will say I had the best duck season or a very good duck season, but I believe you are an anomaly in a picture of a flyway from Canada to the Gulf of Mexico that is having some issues which are not being well understood. And coming back to my point of a moment ago, the Fish and Wildlife Service is going to be focused and is focused, particularly in this administration, on the recruitment of people to hunt and how do we get people into the field? How do we pass on the traditions? And so they are not going to look at a situation of a potentially a decline in waterfowl population numbers as one that should be managed as we might have managed it 20 or 30 years ago. 20 or 30 years ago, when populations of waterfowl went down, the Fish and Wildlife Service, the next year, restricted the bag limit and restricted seasons. That is not going to happen. The adaptive management, as it's called, the adaptive management model, which the Fish and Wildlife Service uses, has been changed so that the only way seasons and limits would be reduced is if we had a catastrophic decline in the bird population. And a catastrophic decline, is, some of you may think we've had one, but is not really, doesn't seem to be, have occurred. And certainly you don't get those kinds of declines in one year. They take place over many years, as waterfowl tend to be longer lived. While the mortality of waterfowl occurs most in the first year, those that make it beyond the first year tend to be able to live 3, 4, 5, 6, and sometimes even longer. So what happened this year is probably the result of a poor hatch a year ago for the Mississippi Flyway, and not a very good hatch this year. So you've had 2 years now of relatively poor production of young. Couple that with the most extraordinary weather that probably anyone who spends a lot of time outdoors can remember this year. We had very cold weather early, and then we warmed up, and we stayed warm. And then we got cold, and then we got warm throughout the flyway. And then towards the month, mid-December, till now, the southern portions of the Mississippi Flyway are drowning in water. There is water everywhere. The backwaters of the rivers are out, whether it be the Yazoo or the White or the Cache or down in Louisiana, water everywhere. Water disperses birds, which A, makes them hard to count, and B, makes them really hard to hunt. So I think we've had a factor of a combination of things where maybe not the greatest production for a couple of years, coupled with weather that was very strange, and enabled the birds to utilize the flyway length more than they might have in an ordinary year where we became cold, stayed cold, and the birds had an orderly migration. And then we have had a situation of a huge amount of water throughout the Mississippi Flyway. The Mississippi River has been high since September, and the result is the birds have scattered. But the Fish and Wildlife Service is going to be hearing from tens of thousands of individuals as to what on earth happened. They were promised one thing and something else was delivered. And I don't say this very often, but we have to realize that what we see in our particular situation may not be reflective of a larger picture. And this year, the larger picture is that it was a really, really bad year, while certain individuals saw spectacular years. But the general trend for the Mississippi Flyway should be worrisome to all of us. It is one where we have been now, over the last half dozen years, consistently seeing hunters on a fairly broad scale not having their expectations met, which means either the Fish and Wildlife Service is overselling. I don't think they're overselling. They don't get paid to oversell. They get paid to produce statistical models. It could be that the statistical models are counting birds in production that may not be there. It could be the flyway continues to shift west. There's very little question that over the past quarter century, the Mississippi Flyway has shifted west with sending birds into Kansas, western Missouri, Oklahoma, that were areas that did not traditionally have large numbers of waterfowl, but which seem to be increasing. Those birds, it's not that there are more waterfowl flying south, it's the distribution of those birds could be changing. As agricultural practices have changed, and we know that agricultural practices on the southern migration drive everything. Birds have wings. It's easy for them to fly hundreds, if not thousands of miles, and they do. And suddenly when you have lots of flooded areas and lots of corn in Oklahoma, where you didn't 25 years ago, it doesn't take but a couple of nights for a duck to go find that. They follow each other, and once they find it, then the next year they are likely to return to that area. So I think it's fair to say we've had a shifting of some extent of the Mississippi Flyway that's not well understood. And the reason I'm talking about the Mississippi Flyway this morning is it is, first of all, where we live here in the Midwest, but it is the most hunted flyway in the continent. It has the most hunters. It also reportedly has the most ducks. It certainly has the most interest in wetland habitat and conservation of any flyway. And if 2018/19 duck season here is an indication of the future direction of the flyway, we're going to have some challenges we haven't had in a long time. And the Fish and Wildlife Service is going to have some challenges as to how to deal with a generally unhappy constituent group, which provides them with a great deal of revenue. So I simply mentioned this morning. I think it's the beginning of a much bigger dialogue that is taking place across the country as to wetlands and waterfowl and how we're going to maintain hunters, potentially as we move into a period of drought when there might not be as many birds. As I said a moment ago, the Fish and Wildlife Service has said already, we're not changing regulations. We don't think the problem is the number of hunters. We think the problem is too few hunters, and how are we going to recruit more hunters? So that's what's going on as we enter the new year in the world of waterfowl. And when I come back from the break, I want to talk a little bit about the world of water, which is certainly for the rest of our lives going to be taking an increasingly important role. And there's some very interesting things taking place to do with water that potentially could also happen here in Illinois, which I'd like to tell you about. So I'll be back in just a moment. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Every game, it's all on the line. Personal, one-on-one, head-to-head. You have to look for every advantage. Strength, speed, and power to win.
Dan Hampton knows when you're looking for a tough competitor, Chevy Silverado has every advantage. Silverado's Ecotec 3 V8 gets better mileage than Ford's F-150 EcoBoost V6. You heard it here. Plus, Silverado's trailering package delivers 12,500 pounds of towing capacity that guarantees hauling muscle. More power, better performance. That's the kind of advantage that wins games. And there's never been a better time to see your local Chevy dealer about the Big Fix lease. It's an amazing lease deal that can lower your monthly payments and give you more Chevy than you ever imagined for less money. Your Chevy dealer knows what it takes to be a winner.
Take it from number 99. Chevy Silverado is an all-star. See your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details. Kick off the season right. Go for it.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Your host, Charlie Potter, here on WGN Radio. And before I went to the break, I was going to talk for a moment about water. In Illinois, we are blessed, as we are throughout the Midwest, with a lot of water. Increasingly, we are learning about the needs of other areas for water other than just California. And this is going to be something that I'm talking about today because I think we're going to see some movement this year. But in the coming years, Illinois is going to be front and center on the nation's desire to have water. As you may be aware, we have water compacts with other states regarding Lake Michigan water. There are certain Chicago suburbs that can't get Lake Michigan water, et cetera. But as a whole, our state is awash with water. What is happening further south is that a lot of the water is drying up. We have irrigation wells in Arkansas that are spitting sand. We have irrigation wells in Louisiana that are doing the same thing further west. In parts of the western part of the Midwest, we're running out of water. And there's a great question as to not only is how agriculture going to get some of its water, but how municipalities and the growth of population centers are going to get its water. So Illinois is sitting here with a lot of water. And the question, and it's totally unregulated. One of the few things in Illinois we actually haven't regulated. The question really is, what are we going to do to enable that Illinois has all the water it needs? And are we going to be smart enough to put ourselves in a situation where Illinois actually could be an exporter of water to other states who need water? This is, and some of you listening may say, well, this is a pipe dream. What are you talking about? No, this is real. When the Rice Belt of Arkansas is rationing water, and the Mississippi Delta in the state of Mississippi from Memphis down to Vicksburg is starting to have water issues, that's a big deal. And they are going to look for places to get their water. And it's going to come from upstream. And we sit here with arguably some of the best water resources in America. So I'm not one for government regulation. I think you all know that. But Illinois could be in a position sooner than later where it can capitalize on a natural resource that it has that other states don't have. The other thing is that we in Illinois and across the Midwest are seeing just these incredible nitrogen loads in our rivers. And when you can't drink the water in Des Moines, Iowa, it's not because of population gains north of you. And you can't drink the water in Toledo, Ohio, it's not because of population gains north of you. It's all to do with the amount of nitrogen fertilizers coming into the soils from agricultural runoff. And in Illinois, to some extent, obviously nitrogen comes from humans as well. So it's part of it is our waste treatment. But most of it in the Midwest, most of the nitrogen issue is a result of agriculture. And the hypoxic zone in the Gulf of Mexico, which is hundreds of square miles, thousands of square miles actually, a dead zone when there's no oxygen, is the result of nitrogen in our water, which causes this dead zone. So the looming issues for us, and they're coming faster than we think, is number one, how are we going to manage our nitrogen loads in our waterways? How are we going to reduce the amount of nitrogen coming off from agricultural runoff? How are we going to also make sure that our waste treatment plants are not adding nitrogen? And then the second thing is, with all the water we have in Illinois, how are we wisely going to use it so that when the time comes for water to be an exported commodity from the state of Illinois, we were in a position to capitalize on it? We may be broke today, but if the trends continue in the coming decades, we will not be broke when it comes to the value of water, which is the most valuable thing in life. We can't live without it. We have nothing to drink, and we don't have crops to grow. So wherever there's irrigated agriculture, there's water that's needed. And wherever water is needed for irrigated agriculture, there's less of it now than there used to be. And no one would have ever thought it was possible for Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Missouri to find itself with wells drying up and pumping sand from its aquifers. But that's what's happening. And it's happening in an increasingly with increasing frequency. So I think that we ought to look at Illinois and decide, in a way, what are we going to do with our water? How are we going to maintain its quality, first and foremost, to get its nitrogen out, to reduce its nitrogen? And how are we going to manage our water so when the time comes that Illinois may, in fact, be an exporter of water in one fashion or another, we're in a position to do so. So anyway, just food for the future, thought. This is Charlie Potter. I hope you've enjoyed the show. I'll be back next Sunday morning, hopefully not to talk about a government shutdown, maybe to talk about the Land and Water Conservation Fund, certainly to talk about the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. I'll be back next Sunday. Thank you for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.